America.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Wiggins America.
The only thing I'm going to need from you guys right now is a cup of coffee.
Wiggins.
Today's global economy waits for no man.
America.
Today's global business climate is like,
whatever, dude.
Hey! Politics is a dirty game. I'm not sure we want to play.
There are forces here at work that you couldn't possibly understand. You have no idea how high up this goes.
Welcome to Wiggins America.
Called me and invited me to dinner, which I was not in the inner circle. I was just overwhelmed. I couldn't imagine why. I drove down to Mar-a-Lago, which I think he thought I live, 10 minutes from there, but it's really 4 hours. And we had a lovely dinner. And at the end of it, he wanted to know why he won Florida, but maybe struggled in some other states that I think we're going to find out he actually did win.
That is Susie Wiles, the White House chief of staff, a known skeptic on election fraud, talking about how she actually thinks that in the coming months or whatever, we're going to find out that there are states that Trump actually won in 2020 that we didn't realize. Welcome to Wiggins America. I find that fascinating because, again, Susie Wiles was not on that train. She was never on that train. So for her to slip that into that little conversation right there is really something. We played that about a week ago on the Annie Fry Show, but I'm just now getting around to talking about it because I wanted to give it its proper due. It took me a while to try to find the clip or the segment where I talked about this very thing. So I did find it, and I think this is the first time I reported on it. This is something I've been talking about for a while, and it involves Susie Wiles. So if you're like, what are you talking about, Ryan? Well, I'm going to play that segment for you. This is something that I said and reported on back in November of last year. Now, if you remember November, no rhyme intended, this was before they had gone into Venezuela and captured Maduro. So keep that in mind on the timeline that I'm reporting this before that had ever happened and had no idea that that was going to happen. Now that it has, stick around for the end of this segment that I'm going to play here, which is not super long, but it'll give you the whole story. And the reason I'm replaying it is just because I want you to know that this was reported that far back and that we've been on it, or I've been on it. And it'll be with Mark Cox, me talking about it on the morning show with him. But at the very end of it, once you hear the end of it, it'll stop. Then I'm going to play what Trump recently said in regards to this same thing to kind of bring you up to speed. So here you go.
Wiggins America.
The reason you came in here this morning, you have a Laura Logan story. I've loved Laura for the longest time. Had her on the show a few times years ago. I think maybe right after CBS let her go or something like that. When she was back here working as an independent journalist, we had her on a few times. Loved her when she had her own show. So now she's focusing some reporting on the 2024 election, right?
So there's a lot of tentacles that go out from this thing, just like usual with any sort of election fraud story. There's so many different talking points and paths you can take here. So I'll try to really summarize. What happened was yesterday, Laura Logan did a podcast. I guess she's independent now is my assumption.
I believe so.
And she did a sit-down interview with two guys. One of them was named Gary Bernstein. And he is a former CIA operative. And I don't remember the other guy's name, but Gary dropped some big bombshells about what the plan was for the deep state or whatever you want to call the thing that would steal an election. Whatever that apparatus is, from Donald Trump, there was a plan to do that in 2024. And this is like an hour and a half long interview. So the summary of it comes actually from Emerald Robinson. I don't know if you ever had her on the show.
I have not.
She is a former White House correspondent for Newsmax. And I've been reading the summary the whole time and listening to the clips as they've come too. But the short version of this is that in October of 2024, Senator Mark Wayne Mullen of Oklahoma and former Senator David Perdue of Georgia had the attention of these three tech guys, one of which was Patrick Byrne, also if you know that name. And they presented the evidence to these two senators. This is how they're going to do it this year. And those two senators, and one of them a former senator, said, oh my gosh, I can see exactly what you're saying, and you've got proof and everything. Let me talk to Donald Trump's chief of staff, Susie Wiles, and see if she'll get this to the president, because they're worried about it. So they did, and they sat down with Susie Wiles. Now, Susie Wiles is pretty establishment. She was not wanting to meet with them, but they're U.S. senators, and they were knocking on her door hard saying, you've got to see this. And she's looking out for her candidate. This is Donald Trump. So she said, okay, I'll take the meeting. She sat down with them and walked away from it going, uh-oh, this is real, and this is a problem. And she is a skeptic. So she goes to Donald Trump, and this is just a couple weeks before the election. She goes to Donald Trump and says, hey, this is something you really probably should look at. And he goes, I don't know what I'm looking at. You know, this is all data, people. I don't know what this is. So he goes, I know one guy who I trust to look at this, and his name is Elon Musk. So he gets Musk in there with these three guys, one of Gary Bernstein, Patrick Byrne, and one other guy. And Elon Musk goes, I don't even care about your dumb meeting. Don't tell me. Just give me your data. Slide it all over, and I'll just look at it. He looks at it, and within a day, he goes, that's all real. That's going to happen. So then he apparently goes out and does a rally. Trump was going to rally that day. He goes out and does a rally with him, and that's the one rally where you hear Elon Musk talking about election fraud. He had not done it up until then, and I'm not sure he did it after that much either. But at that rally, he does. So they figure out how to basically, and this is where it gets really deep, and I'll try not to get too crazy, but they figure out how to reverse the hack because it's coming from servers in Serbia.
Wow.
And this is Elon Musk doing this. They figure out how to basically throw a red herring into it to stop it from doing what it would do on election day. But they didn't know if it worked. They just had to hope that what they did worked. So the report
it's like the
is,
end of a James Bond movie. You don't know till the end if it worked or not, right?
They leave you with a cliffhanger. You have to wait until the sequel to see if it actually worked.
Yeah. So they're all watching this from Mar-a-Lago on election night going, we don't know. We'll see. And they watch the results come in, and then they start to go, okay, it worked.
So what was it going to do?
Okay. So this is where it gets very technical.
Okay.
From the interview with Laura Logan, now these are separate, you know, these are different people reporting on this. From the interview with Laura Logan, what Gary Bernstein said, and by the way, this isn't just hearsay because Patrick Byrne, who was in the meeting, has come out now and said, yes, this is true. I was in the meeting. All of this is accurate reporting. He was in the meetings. He's saying it's true. Gary Bernstein was too. He's saying, yes, this is true.
Is it like hacking into the voting machines and you can do it remotely?
That's I guess, the big picture of it. How they did it, I don't know. But they, yeah. Like, what was your question again? Because I'm getting lost in my
own. How they did it.
Who got rich? I mean, what was it they were trying to do? Usually you follow the money.
Oh, yeah,
you're
going
to figure out who was funding it. But were they going to alter results? Were they going to add votes electronically?
Okay.
What were they going to do?
So what Gary Bernstein said is that this happens in 70% of U.S. counties now. And it's through machines, and they shave vote totals. But here the problem is they do it in a different way in every single county. So you can't find one result and go, oh, this is where they're doing it. They do it. And he said hundreds of statisticians and mathematicians and tech people are involved in this. And he said you can't duplicate it in any particular precinct or county because they change it no matter what. So that if you find it in one, you can't say, oh, I can find that anywhere else because it would just be that one.
You said they tracked it to Serbia, right?
Well, the servers were through Serbia.
We don't know who was actually
they looked at the money and where it came from. And, you know, it's the typical players. It's Iran. It's China.
Yeah, so basically. It's not like anyone's actually going to be held accountable for this.
Well, if they're doing any, if they're American citizens, they could be. But the question is, who is it? Because, I mean, there's so much to this. This is enormous. Now, Here's the thing. Donald Trump tweeted out this. He apparently watched that whole podcast because he tweeted it out, truthed it out last night. And he said, this is basically, in all caps, this is our number one priority as a nation. We have to do that. We have to solve this. And that's good news, that he knows about it, that he's on it. The bad news is, this has been happening. Where is your law enforcement that has been looking at this already?
Thank you.
Why does it take a random journalist podcast for this to get to the DOJ and the FBI? Now, the fact that he's on it is great, but will anything be done about it? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, and something has to be done, but at least he's prioritizing it again. Okay, that was back in November, and once again, after you hear that whole story, that was all involving Venezuela, and it was before they went and captured Maduro. Now they have captured Maduro. And not a lot has been said about this regarding election fraud. Until just recently, somebody sat down with Trump and just straight up asked him. And I mean, bold question asked him. And the problem is, I'm going to play it here in a second. You can hear for yourself. But the problem is, the question is amazing. But Trump confirms nothing. In fact, he kind of just moves back into his talking points about mail-in ballots and blah, 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 blah. Well, that mail-in ballots and stuff, that's not really a part of this conversation. The Venezuela stuff is the machines. Here's the clip.
Venezuela and voter fraud. There are Venezuelan engineer whistleblowers who have provided your administration, my understanding is, with a lot of information and documentation alleging vote rigging in the U.S. elections, including in 2020, through an operation engineered in part by our foreign adversaries and centered in Venezuela. Are you familiar with this information, and is anything going to come of that?
Yeah, a little bit. And, well, I'm familiar with voter fraud because we have a lot of it, I believe, coming up on the 2020 election. The 2020 election was rigged. You know, when I used to say that, they'd say, oh, the cameras would turn off. How can you say? Now they don't turn. The information, a lot of it's already out there. The election was rigged. It was rigged. You look at Georgia, you look at Pennsylvania, you look at these states, they were rigged. It was a rigged election. And they used COVID to do it, and they used crooked, dirty cops to do it. You know, they had dirty cops. Like you read about Comey. Comey's a dirty cop, bad guy, bad for the country, bad guy. But no, the 2020 election was rigged. Anytime you have mail-in voting, you're going to have a rigged election. Anytime you're not using voter ID, the Democrats don't want. They're fighting us on the Save America Act. Anytime you don't have, when somebody says, we don't want voter identification, that means they want to cheat.
You hear that? That's Trump saying a whole lot without saying anything. So he doesn't really address the direct question about Maduro and about Venezuela. He just pivots back to election fraud and 2020. And that's disappointing to me. I want him to be saying more specific things. And it makes me wonder if he knows a lot more and is just not willing to say because there's a lot going on behind the scenes, or if he's staying out of it. If all this stuff with Maduro is going on and he's kind of letting his DOJ, his people take care of it, and he's not involved. I just would be surprised if he wasn't. But I wish, gosh, that question was so good. I wish you would have pinned him down and asked it again very directly. But Trump's so good at kind of the weave, as they say, that he answered it without answering it. Anyway, this is Wiggins America. We got a good show for you this weekend. Stick around. We're going to have Trisha in studio, and that's always fun. This is Wiggins America. I'm going to be consistent on this issue. I've said it before that I like when public officials, whether they be elected officials, politicians, or celebrities or whoever, I like when they quote scripture. Even when somebody like Nancy Pelosi stands up and goes, well, we're to pray without ceasing, so I pray for the president. And you know that she's kind of being sarcastic and you don't know exactly what her faith is. I'm still okay with it because that means there's a basis for us to talk. You know, if I approach you and I say, morally, these things are wrong, and you say, no, they're right, and we have no basis of agreement on what morality even is, then it's harder to talk about those things. But it also is tough to defend people who really are misusing scripture. Enter Letitia James.
And Dr. King talked about that stone of hope. And it's that stone of hope that gives me a fire in my belly each and every morning. It's that stone of hope that allows me to wake up and to stand to Donald Trump and to say, Donald Trump, I'm not afraid of you. It's that stone of hope. It's that stone of hope that gives me power. That's that stone of hope and the belief in each and every one of you to let you know that I'm not going to allow my ancestors, all of those who died for me to be in this position, I am not going to disgrace them and disappoint them. I am going to use the law both as a sword and as a shield and challenge Donald Trump. And each and every time he issues an executive, an illegal executive order, I am going to stand up to him because he represents to me sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity. Sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity.
This is the Attorney General of New York State. Now, she's not quite quoting scripture. She's saying spiritually things here. But she does start quoting scripture in this next bit. And unfortunately, what we have is a situation, and you'll hear the scripture. You probably heard this one, even if you're not a Christian. No weapon formed against me shall prosper. So she finally does quote that scripture in this one. And it's not just like spiritual stuff. And the problem is that if you assume that you just take that, like nothing can stop me, basically, is what that nothing's going to get in my way. I'm going to overcome. Okay, cool. That's a real scripture. But the problem is if you use it to say, no matter what I do, I will win. Even if I'm going against God, it's like you're saying, I'm God, God's behind me, therefore I'm going to win. Instead of saying, what's God's will? I'll follow it, therefore I can't be defeated. So what is it exactly that she's fighting for that she says that she will not be defeated in because no weapon formed against her will prosper? Well, it's race-based hiring, favoring some people over others, but then also coming after any executive order. She almost slips. Any executive order Donald Trump tries to issue. And then she goes, I mean, illegal executive order.
And so DEI, as far as I am concerned, is more than about just black people. Let's be honest.
That's right.
DEI is about paid parental leave. DEI is about disabled children. DEI calls a number, includes a number of categories. So when they talk about DEI, let them know that they're not only coming after us, but they're coming after all of us. And we've got to stand together, stand in community, stand with this great organization under the leadership of our civil rights leader, Reverend Al Sharpton, who has been a light, a bright and shining light in the darkness. But I don't know about you, it's that stone of hope that inspires me each and every day. And listen, faith and fear can never share the same space. And so I'm covered by the blood. And I'm not afraid of Donald Trump. You can come after me, but no enemy, nothing formed against me will perish. Nothing formed against me. Nothing formed against me. Nothing formed against me.
All right. And the funniest thing about the whole clip is that the Attorney General of the state of New York, the one scripture she does quote, she quotes it wrong. No weapon formed against me shall prosper means that I will be victorious. What she says is, no weapon formed against me will perish, which means the exact opposite, that every weapon formed against her will succeed. Is she accidentally claiming the wrong thing there? I guess it remains to be seen, because if God is with her, who can be against her? But if God is not with what she's trying to do, she's trying to jail Donald Trump, and she really won't stop. I don't know if she'll do it now, but she was trying to jail Donald Trump. Well, I guess we'll find out who wins in the end. Trish is here, and she is going to tell us all the Midwest news that you need to know.
Yep, get ready.
What's new in the Midwest?
So much. Buckle up.
I've been told by many people, including Annie, that we're supposed to do more Midwest content.
Let's do it right now. I'm
so,
here
go ahead.
For it. Mm-hmm. Cornfields. It is planting season.
Is it?
If you know any farmers, planting is happening.
Are you sure?
Do I know what they're planting? No. Am I sure that it is planting season? Yes.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Tell me if this story is a Midwestern story.
All right.
Leave turtles in the wild. Do not take them as pets, Missouri officials warn.
Yep, Midwest, go.
It's got to be, right? It's that time of year when spring rains and warmer weather bring wild turtles out to the roads in search of food and mates. Turtles are widely admired by humans for their gentle nature.
Aw.
This is paragraph two. Mm-hmm. If you've never seen a turtle, here's what a turtle is. They often seem harmless and easy to care for, but Missouri officials warn turtles are wild animals and should not be taken from their natural habitats or kept as pets.
So I have heard this about turtles. You know, the get the turtles off the road movement. There's always like the nice people that'll like move them off of roads so they don't get hit by cars.
I knew that that exists. I didn't know it was a movement.
Yes, there's a movement.
Okay.
I don't know if there's a movement. I have heard that you want to make sure you take the turtles in the direction they are going.
Okay.
Because if you try to take them in the opposite direction, they're just going to go right back and all you've done is slowed them down.
Really?
Mm-hmm. So if you're going to get out, obviously be careful. If you are save the turtles from the traffic, God love you. Move them in the direction they're moving.
Have you ever hit an animal with your car?
Ooh, a squirrel one time.
That's
still,
it?
Yeah.
That's not bad.
It's terrible. I still think about it. This has probably been 20 years ago and I still think about it.
Did you see it splatter?
I don't want to talk about it anymore. It was so sad.
Body or headshot?
It doesn't matter.
I have never hit an animal smaller than a raccoon going less than 55 miles an hour.
Hit like a mountain lion?
I've hit a raccoon going 75.
Ooh.
It was on 55-70 and it was like hitting a full-on speed bump going 75 miles an hour. I think it jacked up my front end and all this stuff, and I have no idea what happened. I saw it running.
I can tell you what happened to the raccoon.
No, yeah. I don't think it made it.
I don't think so.
But it was dark, and so it was night, you know, and so this thing just jetted across, and I had no chance to miss it. It was just bam.
It's almost a kindness in the fact that you were going so fast.
I guess. And then I was on a date one time in... I guess high school, because I don't think I knew this girl after high school. And I hit a possum going like 55.
Mm.
And that's the only thing I remember about that date.
That is probably the most memorable thing.
It didn't last, that relationship. So tell me if this story is Midwest enough for you.
Okay.
America's fastest growing cities are in the, quote, exurbs.
I don't know what that means.
Okay. I will tell you. Within the United States, there is a lot of movement happening right now between blue states and red states. We've covered that extensively,
yep.
Talked about it a lot. And of course, the biggest states where people are moving from, California, Illinois, New York, the biggest states people are moving to, Texas, Tennessee, Florida. But
in this area, I'm assuming Missouri's as well.
Well,
Illinois to Missouri.
Well, you know what? That's actually part of this story, right. Is that people who are moving are picking. So if you're going to move, you're going to move to somewhere that you want to be and that you like. And you're not just moving just for politics. You're moving for lifestyle. And that's what this article is about, is explaining not just, oh, people are leaving this state and going to this state. It's, well, where are they going in those states? And they've come up with this term called the exurbs, which is not suburbs. It's definitely not city, because nobody's moving into cities right now anywhere. Suburbs are doing okay, but there's these boom towns, they call them, that are a little outside of the suburbs, but they have pretty much everything you'd want within them. So in this area, you'd think of somewhere like Washington, Missouri,
mm-hmm.
Maybe St. Peter's, Troy, Missouri, maybe even O'Fallon, although O'Fallon, Missouri is probably close to being suburbs. But these are typically little island cities that are big and growing fast because there's a lot of space
to
grow.
They have your Kohl's, your Applebee's, all
yes.
the things that you'd expect.
They have
in
everything,
suburbs.
But they're still close to the major population center of the city, so that if you ever want to go to a baseball game or you want to go see a concert, you're not too far, or you want to go to the airport.
Well, what is, and I don't, does the article explain where the line is? Because when you're talking about this, I'm thinking Arnold, Missouri. It has all of those things.
That's still probably suburbs.
But I'm assuming that's suburbs.
Yeah.
So you have to, how far out do you have to go?
You have to go out to, you know, you could say maybe Herculaneum would be one of these. But you're really talking about almost islands where there's a little bit of rural between where you stop and where this city starts. And the reason for that is that there's a lot of growth potential then because you have space. You can keep going. And so, yeah, a place like Arnold is still growing, but not as fast as some of these cities, which are just exploding across the whole country. And so even if you move within California, let's say you don't leave the state, you're moving to cities like this. And this is where all the growth is happening because it's a little bit out. It's a little bit safer. It's a little bit newer and cleaner. And there's a lot of planning that goes into these communities. So you can kind of make everything a little bit more of a grid, and it's pretty, and you can come up with a lot ahead of time.
What's that look like in 50 years?
I think these cities probably continue to grow, because I was thinking about this a few years ago after COVID. We went and took a vacation to Springfield, Missouri. Why there? I don't know, because it's not like there's nothing in particular in Springfield other than the Bass Pro Shops aquarium. And we went there, I think, because it was, we knew it would be open because it was very conservative. And we were like looking for things in 21 that would just be open. And I thought, this city has everything you'd need. And it's not considered a major city. I mean, it's not a small city, but it has literally every possible thing, including tourist attractions. And I wonder if, because of bad policy in cities, but also just because of the sort of ubiquitous nature of having everything at your fingertips everywhere you go now, you could live almost anywhere. And some people like the rural life, but this is kind of a cross contamination between rural and city.
What about Waterloo, Illinois? I know it's in Illinois.
Yeah.
But is that?
That would be probably considered Highland. Illinois would be, because they're islands. So they're not necessarily growing as fast because they're in Illinois. They are growing, but those would be examples in Illinois. They're just not growing as fast because right here we happen to be on a border,
and you can pay less if you can go 20 minutes in the other direction.
Yeah, you can go in the other direction. And so all the growth is happening in Missouri in these exurbs. And I mean, it's growing fast. If you go to O'Fallon, Missouri right now, it is
booming.
Mm-hmm. Everything in the world is going there right now.
It seems like, and I don't know anything about anything, but it seems like the population center in the city is shifting out that way. Like, we've done events out in Chesterfield.
Yeah.
Like, all the big bands are now playing the Factory instead of, it used to be, oh, they're downtown. They're at, you know, all the venues down here, which obviously my brain can't think of any right now. But now it seems like everybody's playing in the county out further. Everything's moving that way.
Yeah, it's almost like the center of gravity has shifted to a place like Chesterfield, because you're right. All concerts and everything used to be downtown. And now when you have a huge venue like the Factory, you're pulling from even people in Illinois and downtown driving there.
It's clean. There's parking. It's,
yeah. It's got everything you need. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So that's a pretty good Midwest story, right? One more. I have one. It's about Javier Bardem. I don't think that's Midwest.
I don't know. Tell it.
No, I'm going to tell this one instead.
I like him, though.
Kurt Cobain's death was homicide.
Mm.
This is not a brand new story, but I've been keeping it because I thought it was pretty interesting.
Is he a Midwest guy? Why is this Midwest?
I'm just asking you, do you think this is Midwest?
No.
I don't either. So we'll either shelve this or we can talk about it.
What about the Javier Bardem story?
Javier Bardem accuses Trump and Netanyahu of effing toxic male behavior.
Mm, I don't like him as much anymore.
No?
No.
He's a good actor.
He is a good actor.
Very good actor, but he... okay. This is a bizarre story because he says, quote, there is an average of 2 women killed monthly by their ex-husbands or ex-boyfriends or ex-husbands.
That's not funny. Domestic violence is
not
funny.
Well, it's repetitive.
And it's probably true, that statistic, but what does that have to do with Trump and Netanyahu?
And Javier Bardem says, which is horrible, just that amount of women being murdered, it's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of normalized it. I mean, are we effing nuts?
Who normalized that?
It's a really good question. I'm not sure that we did normalize it. Like, oh, we're like, yeah, that's fine.
It's not fine.
We're killing women because some men think they own them, he says.
Who is we?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
Get him on the line.
I also looked up the statistics based on what he said here, which is there's an average of 2 women killed monthly by their ex-husbands or ex-boyfriends or ex-husbands. I looked this stat up, and the same
is true. Did you Google it exactly that way?
No, but I did look it up. The same is true of the reverse. 2 men are killed by their ex-wives or ex-girlfriends.
Yeah, I mean, domestic violence goes both ways.
Yeah, and the other thing, he's wrong. There's more women killed by their ex-husbands and ex-boyfriends per month than that. So
we should really revisit how we think about this.
Yes, yes. And we don't want to normalize it.
We certainly do not.
Javier Bardem really shining a light here. And then he goes on to say, President Donald Trump and, or so, sorry, he says, quote, that problem also goes, that problem, whatever that problem was, goes to Mr. Trump and Mr. Putin and Mr. Netanyahu.
Huh?
Those men saying, my blank is bigger than yours.
Huh?
So in light of that, big Javier Bardem fan?
No, I mean, again, good actor. I'm still confused. So is this a toxic masculinity claim that he's tying in, he's weaving in like the domestic violence problem, and it is a problem and it should be taken very seriously, and he's saying that Trump and Netanyahu have these toxic masculine traits that empower and embolden abusers?
I think that would be the connection.
What was the question? What was the question they asked him to start this interview?
That gets even weirder, because he was just supposed to be promoting his new film, The Beloved, at the Cannes Film Festival.
Mm. Is that about domestic violence? I hope, given the way this interview went.
I don't know. It doesn't say much about that movie.
Huh.
It would be a natural movement if it were. But he went into genocide and was using words like bomb the blank out of other countries.
Huh?
And then tied that into domestic violence. So I'm not really completely sure, but I would have to say it's probably not really a Midwest story, though.
No.
The Cannes mm-hmm. Film Festival, anytime you talk about international film festivals,
no,
not
you're
really
right.
Midwest.
No, you were right about that.
Acknowledging that not everybody hears every moment of this show or the Annie Fry Show, which I am also on, I am going to tell a story here which I have told. Now, if you've heard it, you know the ending, then just bear with me. But it's a good story. It's a really good one. So I got to tell it again. Here we go. Daniela Liverani, she's from Ireland, started suffering regular nosebleeds while touring Southeast Asia in 2014, which the then 24-year-old put down to nothing more than a ruptured blood vessel. Yet after arriving back in her Edinburgh home, now she's from Ireland, but I think she lives in Edinburgh now, she spotted something jutting out from her right nostril, mistaking it for a simple blood clot coming out of her nose. She ultimately ended up at A&E in Edinburgh's Royal Infirmary after discovering that a leech had been living inside her nose for an entire month. Now, I'm going to editorialize here and say that, as I understand it, that means the leech was probably growing also, as I understand it. Moving on here, if you're wondering what happens next, the Glasgow-born woman said, about 2 weeks before I came home from Asia, I started having nosebleeds. I'd fallen off a motorbike just before they started, so at first I thought I must have just bust a blood vessel from falling off. After I got home, the nosebleeds stopped and I started seeing something sticking out of my nostril. I just thought it was congealed blood from the nosebleeds. Even as the leech started protruding from her nose, Daniela, who was working behind a bar at the time, remained convinced it was simply a blood clot. She said, I saw him, the leech, so many times, but I just sniffed him back up. I tried to blow him out and grab him, but I couldn't get a grip of him before he retreated back up my nose. When I was in the shower, he would come right out as far as my bottom lip, and I could see him sticking out the bottom of my nose. So when that happened, I jumped out of the shower to look really closely in the mirror, and I saw ridges on him. That's when I realized he was an animal. My friend Jenny and I called NHS 24, and we were told to get to an accident and emergency room as soon as possible. Daniela was swiftly ushered into a treatment room where medical staff scrutinized her nose with a torch, forceps, and tweezers. By the way, if you have heard me tell this story before, that's as far as we got because Annie basically couldn't take it, and I think we ran out of time. This is all new. So listen to what happens next. The staff were horrified, she said. The doctor used a nose forceps to parse my nostrils open really wide. It was agony. The nurse and Jenny pinned me down to the bed. Whenever the doctor grabbed him, the leech, I could feel him tugging at the inside of my nose, trying to retreat back up. Then, all of a sudden, after half an hour, the pain stopped. And the doctor had the leech in the tweezers. He was about as long as my index finger, she says forefinger, but as fat as my thumb. Can you imagine having that in your nostril? You couldn't breathe. He could move so fast as well, which freaked me out. I have no idea how he got up there, but he had gotten bigger and bigger from feeding on my blood. He had been curled up in a big ball using my nostril as a little nest, so Jenny and I called him Mr. Curly. At one point, I could feel him up at my eyebrow. I asked the doctor what would have happened if I hadn't gone to the hospital, and she said he'd probably have worked his way into my brain. The leech was dispatched to a specialist hospital in London for additional testing to ensure it hadn't transmitted any diseases to Daniela. Fortunately, it hadn't, and now the hardened creature, engorged with her blood, was returned to her in a jar for disposal as she saw fit. It made me squirm, she admitted, but the curator at the American Museum of Natural History in New York suggested in this article, Mark Sadal, Daniela could have picked up this leech from water in Vietnam if she had been swimming, or it could have gone in through her mouth as she was drinking water. Does that make you maybe think twice about drinking the water when you go out of the country? It certainly does me. He added, even though there was around a month, it was there for around a month, these leeches don't grow all that quickly. So it wouldn't have been much smaller when it went up there, or would have been much smaller when it went up there. It would have been quite sizable at the end, though. It's interesting that people don't feel these leeches go up their nose. In conclusion, she got to keep the leech in a jar, which I don't know if she kept. I think the implication from the article is that she did. And this was over 10 years ago, and she survived it. How crazy is that? Of everything I've just listed, what to you is the grossest part of that story? Obviously, the whole thing is gross. But I'll tell you what makes me squirm when I read it, and when I read it just now. When it said that she could feel it up in her eyebrow, it was going to move on. It was going to move into other parts of her sinuses. Oh my gosh, that thing is big too. I can't show you the picture, obviously, but think about your forefinger, your index finger, and then it being thicker than that. Being as thick as your thumb, that's a big leech. That's the end of the show. Aren't you glad you stuck around? What a great weekend we're having. Here on Wiggins America, you can get the podcast by typing in Wiggins America, and I'm not sure why you wouldn't with great stories like this. We'll see you next week.